Actually, there may be extra time later for people to ask questions if there's one person that hasn't arrived, so we'll see. But we want to keep it to 20 minutes for the time being. Okay, the next presentation is factors affecting adoption of e-prescribing in high-need settings, solo practices and safety net clinics serving urban Medicaid patients. Sounds like something very important to my interests. This is presented by Dr. S. Ray Starr, Master of Philosophy and Master of Organic
Organization
of Behavior. Wow. Okay. Mr. Starr serves as a senior biostatistician at LA Care Health Plan, a public agency that provides Medicaid and SCHIP health insurance to a large multicultural, multilingual, low-income population in Los Angeles County, California. Ray's duties include oversight of the annual CAHPS survey, which members assess the quality of healthcare services. Because the majority of LA Care members have declared language preference other than English, language access is a vital issue in providing services. The presentation will focus on how to use the CAHPS survey findings to identify and target interpreter services so that members can communicate effectively with their doctors regarding medical treatment. Forgot to mention, I'll just give you a motion to tell you how much time you have left. Okay.
I guess APHA never forgets. That description was from 2009 on interpreter access, so this will be about pharmacy, not about interpreter access. Thank you. Pardon me, my error in getting it uploaded. Okay, as Simon noted, I need to read the disclosure. Following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to the presentation existed during the past 12 months. I am employed as senior biostatistician at LA Care Health Plan, the local initiative health authority of Los Angeles County, California. LA Care is a public entity competing with commercial insurers in the Medicaid and SCHIP markets in LA County. Outline, I'll proceed as follows. I have a lot more words on the slides that I'm going to read, but if the content interests you, there is a downloadable PDF. Learning objectives, or describe provider assessments about the impact of e-prescribing on patient safety, provider efficacy, and provider satisfaction with the prescribing process. So this was survey-based, and it's based on their perceptions. We do have some clickstream data and data on the prescriptions themselves, but the assessments of safety and provider efficiency largely came from providers. On self-reported information on a pre-test and a post-test survey. Weaknesses in the conventional wisdom on recruiting doctors as early adopters or physician champions. So what lessons did we learn from this exercise? Identify implementation barriers that reduce provider participation in e-prescribing, and then identify factors that improve providers' likelihood to continue e-prescribing. So that's what our study was about, is how to find out who will be an early adopter of e-prescribing and how to enhance their experience so they continue using it. Little background on the health plan. We're a large, diverse membership in LA County, mostly Medicaid, about two-thirds pediatric, often Spanish-speaking, roughly 21% of Medicaid-managed care in California is in our plan, and roughly 2.1% of Medicaid-managed care nationally. We're about 1 in 14 LA County residents. We serve different language concentrations, and mostly urban, suburban, and the high mountain desert is somewhat suburban. So the goals of the project were, to implement e-prescribing, determine the feasibility, benefits, and barriers to e-prescribing in a cohort of Medicaid providers in LA County. The benefits sought in launching e-prescribing were, of course, improve patient safety. Also improve health outcomes, better quality, more face time with patient. We thought that the technology would help the doctor spend more face time with the patient because they could do the prescription while they're there talking to the patient. Efficiencies. We hoped it would save time for doctors, pharmacists, and patients and reduce costs as we have an increasing population. The doctors spread thinner, so saving them time should help reduce costs, we would hope. Additional goals were to recruit providers serving low-income residents and learn how to identify and recruit early adopters to help spread the technology to their colleagues, and then identify and remove barriers. Those were the goals. The design and methodology were a convenient sample of 56 providers in 10 facilities, two fairly large safety net clinics, and then 8 small solo practices, so kind of a spread of different kinds of providers that served the low-income population. The evaluation method was 2 surveys, a pre-test, post-test, pharmacy claims data, and clickstream data from the e-prescribing tool. And then the definition of a doctor, those who wrote 500-plus prescriptions in the 12-month study, and some wrote many more. This was quite a liberal definition. That's not very much activity once a person gets up and running. But we wanted to see who's even using it at all. Who did it take hold with? So from within that, if we need to screen further to find out who are really the heavy users, we set a low bar, so deliberately. Because our population is largely pediatric, they're low utilizers of prescriptions anyway, so we set a low bar for that reason as well. The cohort distribution, we started with 150 providers, and by the time we got into the project, saw who was using the PDA, the handheld computer, and then who would respond to the 2 surveys, front and back. And that we were down to about 33 at the end, so quite high attrition in this search for who would be the adopters. Analysis and findings. This was the utilization rate for the e-prescribing. We kind of ignored the first 3 months as startup, because that would naturally be slow to get going. E-prescribing was by a small PDA, handheld computer, that the doctor would enter the prescription on and then sync it up to the network and have the prescription sent to the pharmacist. And so the first startup was getting them trained, getting the technology in their hands. And then, as you see, it's quite up and down. There was a period when one clinic had their IT system down, and they were switching over. And so it's kind of up and down. And then we did a follow-up after that study to see, did they continue using it once our study was ended, once we had ended the formal 12-month sign-on that they had agreed to participate. We renewed their license to the software tool and to see if they would continue using it. So it appears that they continued even after the project ended. So it kind of took hold with some of the providers. Average active user rate was about 80% of those who stayed in after the initial recruiting period. And a couple of unexplained drop-off in utilization. We're wondering if that's somehow a holiday effect and data latency from the vendor, but can't tell really for sure what happened in November there. The results of the surveys, we asked providers their perceptions of e-prescribing. What would it do for them? What would it do for patient safety? So now that sounds mushy, you know, their opinions. It's probably going to be halo. They're going to tell us what they think we want to hear, right? But it's a pre-post within subject design. So they would have to Jimmy the calculations. They'd have to know in advance what we're going to ask on the post-test, or that we will ask the same questions, and they'd have to remember what they answered the first time in order to play with the answers. So we felt like we got reliable information from them, where it's within case change is what we're looking for in the pre-post design. So anyway, 91% of providers believe ERX reduced pharmacy calls about illegible handwriting, so that would be the time savings would be coming from something like that. They're on the phone less once they write the prescription on the software tool. It doesn't have any handwriting issue whatsoever. The prescribers recalled the PDA alerted them to potential drug-to-drug interactions, so they were feeling there were some benefits. Pre-post comparison, their perception of how many ADEs they had dropped from 53 to 39, which is a tiny number. We were looking for any evidence at all that they were using this and seeing a benefit. So again, it's pretty liberal standard. But the pre-post comparison, they didn't know in advance what we're measuring, or they would have to remember what they answered 12 months before in order for them to jimmy that number. So we tend to believe there was some drop. We tested the minutes reduced on pharmacy calls, and it turns out to be significant, but is 3 minutes reduction clinically meaningful? Not much time saved at all. So we kept looking for other effects of this. 67 believed it saved them time, but we didn't detect that in their estimates of how much time they saved. And saving 3 minutes in a day, is that very much? But one thing, it did appear to increase time spent total time spent, so that was kind of surprising, on pharmacy calls to the health plan for formulary clarification and prior authorization. So they did some kind of work there. We got the feeling that the more they had the tool which would allow them to do lookups they probably weren't doing before. And so they were perhaps doing a more thorough job. And then as we move to the bottom of this slide, increased generic utilization rates wasn't one of the goals of the study and wasn't something we particularly pushed. But the PDA provided access to the formulary, and my guess is they were not doing that lookups very much. And this provided them a way to do that, so they actually ended up spending more time. So rather than saving them very much time on that end, they were actually doing something that is helpful to the health plan. Of course, we'd love to save money. But more importantly, I also on the another survey that I do, the CAPS, the Consumer Satisfaction Survey, a comment that keeps coming up from our members is the doctor told them they needed brand X. They get to the pharmacy. The pharmacist tells them, no, it's not on formulary. It's not covered. And while my doctor told me this is what I need this to save my life or whatever. But so they end up paying out of pocket. And these are Medicaid members who don't have much money to begin with. So that's a serious problem. And it keeps coming up in comments among the members. And so the fact that doctors use the tool to look up formulary, it saves the pharmacist time and frustration, it saves the member time and frustration, and also saves them some costs. So that was an unexpected benefit. Okay, barriers identified. They reported a number of problems, and we're getting kind of into the lessons learned. 68% reported trouble with their own office's internet connection and so forth, and there are different issues they had, as would occur with any technology. Some just said they were too busy to bring up the tool and use it. 32% it takes too much of their time. 61% said patient information wasn't there. So I'll draw these into lessons learned in a moment, but their comments informed us as to what we should have probably done. So several lessons. The infrastructure needs to largely be intact and working before you really start recruiting. We learned the hard way what was not working on these poor tests, our guinea pigs, our test pilots. And those who stuck with it helped us learn the lessons. And number two is kind of near and dear to my heart, make your mistakes early, small, and cheap. So try a small rollout and so forth. The provider recruitment process, we still need an accurate profile to find out who are the, how am I on time, Simon?
You got about 7 minutes.
Okay, that's about what I got here too. Okay, so we still want an accurate profile, but what we learned from this was helpful. I think there needs to be a critical mass at the clinic and also a critical mass in terms of the health plans. The provider sees many different patients from many different health plans. So if it's only one health plan that they're doing this for on this PDA, this handheld computer, there's not as much reason to pick it up and use it unless it covers a lot of their patients. So you really want to partner with other health plans and get their formularies uploaded and their patient listings uploaded so that the doctor picks this up and uses it on more patients. So picking a small set of doctors and committing them, rewarding them whatever needs to happen. Ours, the reward was they got a PDA and they got the software subscription. And so they didn't have much reason to participate, yet they came through and did in many cases. But I would have more critical mass in place to see more benefit. Pharmacy buy-in, the next ones are crucial. We found that doctors would often say their patients came back saying the pharmacist didn't have the prescription, so of course it wasn't ready. The pharmacists weren't checking the facts, etc. And turns out they're not really rewarded for this. They get charged, actually, per prescription, so that they were taking a financial hit for this. And so we recruited doctors. We focused on recruiting doctors rather than recruiting pharmacies, and I would almost make that an equal effort. So that was a good lesson learned, is that you want to focus on everybody who's involved in it, that it's going to cause them work. And so we needed pharmacist buy-in, and because ERX is part of ongoing healthcare reforms, they need to be doing it anyway, but it would have been nice for us to go to the pharmacies with something in hand saying, we'll defray your costs, or here's your reward for working with us and working with our doctors. Many of the doctors were actually doing it both ways, e-prescribing and then writing the paper prescription. So they were calling the pharmacy and saying, okay, check your facts, and so forth. So the doctor is actually hand-walking the process through and making it work. So I would have more of the infrastructure up and running before doing widespread recruiting. So it's a good lesson learned the hard way. Learning objectives. Providers perceive benefits to safety and efficacy. Some gains were observed in time efficiencies, but they weren't large. Providers reported fewer calls from pharmacies to clarify handwriting, and so that has a safety aspect to it. Then describing weaknesses, we found no reliable predictors of successful adoption. There was kind of an assumption that, well, we should have picked the early adopters to begin with, because that would be a richer set to begin with. Only they aren't born with early adopter tattooed on their forehead, so we couldn't find them that way. We had to do the kind of recruiting we did to find out who would stick with it. I would just have more of the structure up and running to make it easier on those who do offer themselves as an experimental subject. Then identifying implementation barriers, gaps in data, member eligibility, the formularies, having more of the data uploaded and on the provider's PDA would help. And the factors, give pharmacies a stake and so forth. These all relate to things I just covered. The aftermath, from the lessons learned, it stayed with institutional memory within the organization, and we were, in a way, ahead of the curve. After passage of the High Tech Act of 2009, we were selected to administer the program in LA County to promote health information technology adoption at clinics, which is part of that infrastructure you would want in place before launching more widespread e-prescribing and so forth. And this is acknowledgments to the folks who supported this project and to the co-authors as well. Appreciate your time and ready for any questions.
Is there any provision for clicking someone who tells them to put the prescriptions in Spanish? I mean, that's a big issue with safety as far as guarantee. If you don't know Spanish very well, you write a prescription in English and you want the instructions to be given to the patient in Spanish or another language. But Spanish is one of the main ones.
Now, the question was, does the ERX software allow printing the prescription in Spanish or not?
Automatically.
Right. And my answer is I don't know, but I don't believe so. But
yeah.
So it's I'm speculating. I don't believe it's in there. For the most part, the assumption, I think, is that the pharmacist will know English, that that's the operating business language. But it's not necessarily true with our population. A number of the pharmacies are like Farmacia Familiar. That might be a Spanish-speaking pharmacist. So that's an excellent point, language access for the pharmacist as a safety issue.
Pharmacist explaining one thing, but also having it printed in Spanish.
Well, on ERX, I'm not sure the member. I don't know what they get. They go to the pharmacy to pick it up, so it's sent electronically to the pharmacy. But what they receive, that's a good point. So
some
they can.
Models.
So they can. Yeah. But if they have it on the paper, that. Yeah, but they're given instructions, and so if they have it, they can check up on the pharmacist as well to see, is this, you know, here's what my doctor said I needed, and is this what you gave me? I like that point because I also work with the language folks, and I think that's a point they will like to have noted. So the answer is, I don't know, but that's a great point, and I'll carry that back. Ma'am?
I'm curious about the 120 people who did not, who dropped out of the survey part of the study. Do you have any sense, did they stop using the e-prescribing? Could they be a source of good information about the possible barriers?
Now the 120 who dropped, I don't, if...
Did you start with 150 and then
right.
Get up
now they didn't even, the 120 you're talking about, the real drop-off were the ones, the really 76 started. And then 56 participated in the pilot. So there were some that enrolled, but then they were pulled due to non-use. We don't know much about them other than they weren't using it, so we pulled it. We pulled them. And 10 providers dropped out during the study period, got sick, left the profession, moved out of the area, that sort of thing. Don't know much about them, whether they ever continued. They kept the PDA. I don't know if they're using it or not. We didn't have clickstream data on them, so I doubt they were using it, or we would have gotten that data capture. We'd love to have gotten. I mean, we took anything we got on clickstream data. But don't know about the providers who originally recruited, the 150, that dropped down to 76 who actually agreed to sign on. So don't know. I haven't done any analysis of who actually signed on of the 150. What were their attributes? I don't have very much information on doctor demographics.
Do you follow
That's an excellent point. Problem is, if they, the problem is they did not want to participate. So even completing the survey, so all we have is those who completed the survey and not asked about the barriers quite thoroughly. It's an excellent point. We weren't sure quite how far we could go with where they were not participating or where they were not cooperating. Any other questions? Otherwise, I'm going to click myself out of here. Thank you.